This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Monday, October 23rd, 2023. I'm Caleb Brown. How do we draw the line between mundane freedom of speech for government officials and jawboning? That's compelling compliance from private actors in ways that would not be legal or constitutional if done legislatively. In the debate over how online speech and the platforms that host it are regulated, Cato's David Insera helps delineate where speech ends and jawboning begins. This is a subject I've discussed a lot with our colleague Will Duffield and Jennifer Huddleston, but it is jawboning, a very sort of arcane word for essentially when the government exerts an unclear but undue pressure minus legislation, minus regulation. It's just sort of flexing in a way to try to cow compliance from the private sector actors that they would like to cow. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. When we talk about jawboning, it is a bit of an arcane term. I think an easier to understand term would be censorship by proxy. When is the government cajoling the private sector to effectively do what the government can't do itself? And so the government's not allowed to censor people because of the First Amendment. But if it can just, you know, strongly suggest, if it can coerce you, the private sector, into doing what the government wants, that's still illegal, but it's harder to notice that because it's often secretive and not public.
So in years past, what are some clear-cut examples that we can point to? Because as you say, it's kind of fuzzy, and the government probably prefers it that way. It's something that they can't do through these other channels, or can't easily do, or can't constitutionally do through these other channels. What are some clear-cut examples that we've seen, you know, despite the fact that it's hard to nail down?
Yeah, exactly. So there is some jurisprudence there here, going back to even when one of the sort of big cases is a bookseller, Bantam Books, where the government came in and said, you know, if you sell these books, then there might be some government action that's taken against you. But not saying that we're going to arrest you or do these things, but, you know, there could be some bad consequences for you from our side. And that was sort of one of the bedrocks in this area where it says, no, you can't suggest that there will be government punishment if the private sector actor doesn't do the government's will. So the line of coercion is one that's fairly firmly entrenched in the jurisprudence. But once you move on from there, it becomes a lot more gray. What about, someone who just, a government actor that's just constantly recommending something and, you know, really strongly suggesting that a private sector actor should take down a piece of content or take a certain piece of action. That's where the courts have not agreed. So far, the courts have generally said that it has to meet that higher burden of coercion, where there's clearly a punishment that is being suggested by the government if the private sector does not comply. This case, however, the one Missouri v. Biden that's currently being looked at, the Fifth Circuit applied a different standard. It said that maybe we should have a more expansive view because on the whole, we see a constant pattern, a tone and precedent of people of the government suggesting in a lot of different ways that really these companies need to change their behavior. It would be best if they changed their behavior with some implicit threats in the background, with government actors using colorful language and swear words when they don't get what they want, a tone that is maybe coercive in some cases, but in other cases isn't. And so taken together, the question is that a legal standard? Is this sort of nexus of all this action, is that enough to be considered a violation of the First Amendment? That's what this current case really is all about.
So if Elizabeth Warren or Ted Cruz or J.D. Vance or Josh Hawley start wagging their finger at my speech platform, I'm probably going to pay attention to it. I'm going to take it seriously.
Yeah, there actually is a case directly involving Elizabeth Warren, I believe, in the jurisprudence here. And the court there said, look, first of all, she has her own expressive rights, right? She can do what she wants. But there's still a concerning piece here about government figures who do have significant power to wield, saying, you better change, otherwise Otherwise, you know, maybe we're going to punish you in the laws. Maybe we're going to regulate you. Maybe we'll engage in antitrust action against you. How do we as a society handle that sort of, maybe they're allowed to say as a public figure, I have my own speech rights. I think that yes, I'm empowered as a legislator to suggest that we should make changes to our laws. But it's still disconcerting when there's an inherent like change your mind or else I'm going to use the power of government to force you to change your behavior. That is the problem. And that's really what is at stake in these jawboning or censorship by proxy cases. Because right now, the laws have really only said that the most egregious forms of coercion, those are violations. But those less clear, where it's just really strong and constant suggestions, those haven't traditionally met the bar. And so that's the question of, can we draw that line in an effective place? And so far, the answer is the courts haven't been able to. And additionally, it's not clear that, you know, legislation could do any better, because legislation would also have to deal with all these difficult questions of what is acceptable speech? Exactly what can the government say to a private actor, and what specifically can it not say? And it has to define that across a whole spectrum of different issues. That's a challenge in practice.
I can imagine even just having a few senators wagging their fingers in public, that could rattle markets or publicly traded firms. So there is potentially a punitive benefit that lawmakers or agencies can achieve just by making those kinds of threats, even if they're empty.
Yeah, the bully pulpit effect here, right? And like I said, in one sense, they have their own expressive rights and we want to make sure that our legislators have the ability to speak that way. And this is where the question of also private versus public comes into effect, right? If it's just someone saying, I really hate the way that this private actor is doing business, I'm a legislator, I think it's concerning, and I think we need to take action against this kind of bad behavior. Okay, well, at least we as the public at least are aware of the threat that's being made. It becomes, I think, even more like invidious and dangerous when it's behind closed doors, when there's maybe a combination of, we'll punish you in public as legislators, but also, by the way, on the back end, I really need you to remove these pieces of content because I think they're bad. And that's really, like I said, that's really where Missouri v. Biden has the original decision by the district court judge went into detail, 150 plus pages of all the different types of communication that were going on behind closed doors between the government and these social media companies. That's, I think, where it becomes even more difficult for things like the courts to work effectively. How can courts take action if you don't even know these communications are going on? That alone is a challenge and a roadblock for using the courts as the solution going forward. Like, yes, we may have this jurisprudence and it might evolve and it might improve, but how do we find it?
So this matters more because we're talking about the government engaging in this behavior. If it were a private sector actor, you know, there's intimidation, there are other ways of sort of dealing with this, and courts would have to, you know, handle that on sometimes a case-by-case basis. But in the case of the government doing this, obviously they deserve a much greater amount of scrutiny when they're doing things that they are not authorized legislatively to do, or at least would be, you know, thrown out of court very quickly as First Amendment violations.
Yeah.
So what is the short-term solution while courts try to figure out where the line is?
Yeah. So if the courts aren't the be-all and end-all solutionists, especially as they go through a process of figuring out what exactly this line should be, and like I said, they may never get to a point where the line is sufficiently clear. But what we do need, I think, to do in the short term, and maybe this is even this is probably a good long-term solution as well, is we need greater transparency in terms of forcing government actors to report those non-public communications that they're having with social media platforms, with tech companies, with really any private actors, because it's in those secret and non-public communications that a lot of this cajoling and coercive sort of behavior can occur. And I really do think that if you can drag these secretive acts of suppression into the sunlight, that alone will have a sterilizing impact. When Americans found out about, you know, the Disinformation Governance Board at DHS, they were rightly upset that, like, what is the government doing setting up this body to sort of act as this sort of semi-Orwellian organization of governance of truth, right? Like, what is the role of the government there? Why are you doing this? And it was quickly rolled back and disbanded. Bringing these communications to the public, that alone, I think, means that the government has to tread more carefully in its requests with the private sector. But it also actually helps the courts. If it's made public that the Department of Homeland Security was constantly saying, you need to remove this speech, well, that's public now. Now, that person who was being targeted for suppression by the government, they can go to the courts and say, look, I've got something here that says, I think they went too far here. They kept coming after me. They were using really aggressive language with the social media company. I want redress of my grievances here. So the transparency even helps the courts in fulfilling their role as protectors of American liberties.
David Nsera is a fellow for free expression and technology at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you please. And thank you for listening.